of cream, red roses too.
This is Ed Cohen, your editor and publisher of GlobalBusinessNews.net, and your host today on GlobalRadioTalkShow.com, coming to you today from Florida as well as downtown San Diego. Our special guest today is Jay Jamrod, Senior Vice President of Research for I4CP, the Workforce Strategy HR Training Group. Looking at the next gen, that's Generation Z. Hey, Jay, tell us a little bit about Z. What is it?
First, the company is I4CP, and we are a research organization. We help companies leverage talent to build high-performing organizations. So Gen Z, whenever you're looking at generations, and we did a lot of research on Gen X and the millennials globally, and now we've done two studies on Gen Z with over 600 in one group setting and 770 in the second group. And when we first try to look for things, we look for what is it that crosses across all socioeconomic groups in a generation that becomes a generational marker, a generational memory, some shared characteristic. And what we saw with Gen Z is very much they're a scared generation. In other words, the world is a scary place. They have lived through a lot in their formative years. And especially the Great Recession we've been through, in addition to terrorism, homegrown terrorism, mass shootings in schools, et cetera, et cetera. So the first one thing that came out of this was they're very pragmatic. They're a very realistic generation. They're not idealistic at all. They want a job. They want to work for a company for 10 to 20 years. They want a lot of different things to do within that company. They don't want to stay in one job forever, but they will stay for one company. In other words, where millennials were yours, they always had one foot out the door. Gen Z will be a group where you will work hard to lose them. They want to stay with one company. So they're very pragmatic. They're very realistic. The other thing that was surprising with this group, since they're very technologically sophisticated, was they want more face-to-face communication than ever before, both from the boss, both from the company. They want to look at them straight in the eye. And it's just because of this lack of trust we're seeing permeate society, they have a lack of trust. And they want more face-to-face. When we ask purposely, is Skype the same thing as face-to-face? Twice they said, no, it's not. Emphatically, they said no, and they want more face-to-face.
So this is diametrically opposite to millennials, isn't it?
Some way it is. Now, some of the millennial characteristics are carrying over. Like, they do want to work for companies that are socially responsible, but it's not just the be nice social responsibility. They're very much into the three-legged stool of people, profits, and planet. So how do they treat people? How do they make profits, and how well they're saving the planet? And it's more community-based than globally-based. Technology, of course, they want to work for a company that has the latest technology, and they want social media. They want to bring their devices to work, but they do want a lot of face-to-face at the same time. They're very competitive, too. They know the difference between winning and losing. These participation trophies, they definitely don't like. They know the difference between winning and losing, and they want to win. They're very competitive.
Looking at the survey summary here, 93% of Gen Z says that a company's impact on society affects their decision to work there.
Correct. Now, when we drill down, and that was from the first survey, and we've just finished the second survey, so that hasn't been published yet. When we drill down on it, they definitely want that, and most of them will want to work for a company like that, but they're also very aware that companies have to make profits. And how they treat the people in the organization is also a big concern. When we drilled down on it, it was a little bit more diverse.
So you say that Gen Z is focused on finding the intersection of purpose and profit. It will be with the rise of the social entrepreneur when substantially truly means finding the right balance between people, profits, and planet. We have a caller with a question. It's Dan Streeter, co-author of the book, Old School with New Tools, the extra 5% that takes you to the top of your sales game and keeps you there. So, Dan, what do you think of Generation Z, Gen Z, so far?
I am a former teacher and a former principal, And so I have a little background in this piece because I've grown up with both the millennials and the Z generation. And what I know is exactly what your guest is talking about, is that, and I would have to agree with him on all of those fronts from a truly pragmatic and seeing those kids grow up. The other part that, that I think most people miss is that I think that this will be the generation, just like the millennials, were the greatest generation in respect to social entrepreneurship that that really had ever been seen by the world. This new generation, the Z generation, will even further that cause around social entrepreneurship in ways that we never have expected. And a lot of that has to do with Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Essentially, that, that Forbes created this great article that at the $50,000 level, essentially, we're able to be able to do all of the things in Maslow's hierarchy of needs all the way up to the point of self-actualization. We belong.
We were also doing a parallel research project looking at the evolution of work. And here we interviewed about Fortune 1000 companies, CHROs, CEOs, and COOs, looking at the future of work. And the common thread that came through this is when they're looking at workers nowadays, at any range age nowadays, they're looking for more control and flexibility. They're tired of the corporate world where you need a Valium and Prozac just to survive. They're going meeting to meeting, et cetera. So they want more control and flexibility. So the one thing we saw with the Gen Z is following this trend, they very much want to control their work environment, where they work, how they work, what they do. They expect to be hired before there isn't even a job. And some companies are doing this already and then writing a job description that's customized to them. They want a customized learning experience where they do it on their time, on their schedule. They want customized benefits, customized compensation, pretty much everything we're thinking about being customized to fit, especially the top talent. Now, this is all supposing that the economy continues to chug along and we continue for a war for talent. Of course, we go into another recession, all bets will be off, but very much looking for control and flexibility over their work lives. And this, by the way, cuts across a lot of generations today. It's like a new trend that's just like cutting through it. We looked at Uber, and not because the business model is so unique, which it is, but why are they attracting people to be Uber drivers or Lyft drivers for that matter? It's because of the control and flexibility it gives them over their lives, when they work, how they work, et cetera. And so, and we saw this a lot. We really drilled down with this customization with Gen Z, and it permeated almost every question we asked. Now, here's the problem. We are used to having one size fits all. We are used to having equity issues. So everybody has the same kind of package. Everybody's equal, and everybody gets treated the same. If we're customizing, it will raise hell for leaders. It will raise hell for organizations. The amount of communication and social skills that will be needed by frontline supervisors is just off the charts.
Okay, now tell us about your latest survey from Institute for Corporate Productivity, that's I4CP.
The evolution of work?
Yeah.
So the evolution of work, what we started to get into was all these, the growth of the non-traditional worker. And so that spurred us, because when we look at, there's about 32% today who are non-traditional workers. That means freelancers, contractors, consultants, also contingent workers, part-time. And they're predicting that that's going to grow to about 50% in a few years. And so we tried to get into, is that true? And then what does it mean for organizations? And 95% of the people we interviewed said, yes, that is, they think it is true. In fact, in some companies, it's already happening right now. And so this growth of control and flexibility is driving this. And what it does for corporate cultures, what it does for leadership, and we especially dug into this whole concept of leadership, because we do a lot of research on the whole leadership development continuum. And what we've seen today is there's a lot of it being pushed down. So leadership development should start early, like a first-line supervisor or individual contributor. If you wait to mid-management level or above, it starts having a negative correlation with leadership effectiveness. So all these things are being driven down to that first-line supervisor. And what we're seeing is more than project management or business acumen. Those are like table stakes. So what's happening today is that they need a lot more social skills, how to build, collaborate, how to influence, how to build trust. Think about the first line supervisor who's in a matrix organization, and they're trying to manage people that they don't even see around the world, don't report to them. And then 50% of their workers won't even be their employees. They may be freelancers. So how do you use social media to build trust? How do you build your social media to build collaborate? How do you build your social media to influence? It's becoming a very difficult job at that level. That's where the rubber's meeting the road right now, is at that first-line supervisor, that first-line leader or manager.
Okay, so now, Jay, tell us about, once again, Generation Z. You're saying that they're really smart, they're really well-trained, they grew up with technology, and they'll sign on to a company and then be trained into something, and if the company treats them right, they stay, they're not going to leave. Is that right?
That's what they're saying right now. Of course, when you look at generations, you also have to look at age. And so when people age, they also change some of their perceptions and motivations. So when they're young, they have a very different look at the world than when they, after they get married and have children, have a mortgage, and their spouse is working. So as we age, we also change our motivations. Right now, they are motivated to get a job. And when you take a low-paying job in a social responsible company or a high-paying job that isn't socially responsible, they're sort of split. When you ask for pay, they want pay. Out of all the benefits, that's the highest rated one. When you ask them about buying things, though, it's interesting because they would rather buy an experience than buy an item. So they're very much looking for the experience. If I advise an organization, they will work for you for a while if they're being treated right, if they have pay, if they have a good boss, and all that stuff. But they also want experiences. And so that means more than just sitting in your office doing one job day by day by day, year by year by year. They want more experiences.
Sounds like it's a very interesting workforce that's developing. Do you think there'll be conflicts between Z and millennials?
When we asked the question of which generation you would get along better with, they said millennials. But remember, they're very close right now. The ones we're surveying are what we call cuspers. They're right on the edge. And so they would carry on. They would probably be more aligned to the millennials, especially the younger millennials. But their characteristics seem to be mirroring baby boomers in a lot of ways.
Fascinating, huh? That's like our grandchildren. Jay Jamrock, tell us about I4CP and what else you're into.
We are a research institute. We're member-driven. Our members drive our research agenda. And so we have many working groups that look at the different issues we should be working at. So we have a CHRO group, a chief learning officer group, a chief diversity officer group, chief talent acquisition group, and there's other ones too. And they drive our research agenda. Right now, we're finishing up a project that we started with the Aspen Institute and the government, White House, around upskilling America. And what is it going to take to bring frontline workers who don't earn a lot of money to really upskill them to a position where they can have a more of a career and a future than just working in a grudge job, maybe working at Walmart or maybe working at McDonald's or something like that. What are companies doing to really upskill the skills of those people? And it was interesting because many, many companies, and even more growing number, are very concerned about that group and are starting to invest in upskilling the frontline workers. But it's almost a three-legged stool that companies have to do. One, they have to work with local community colleges to make sure there are courses available for them to upskill to the right things in their community. Two, they have to be able to market the opportunities better to those frontline workers. And third, and here's the big letdown, managers, those first-line supervisors, after all the other things I've told you, have to also be developers of talent. So they have to be measured and rewarded on how well they are developing the talent that reports to them. So that's one. We're also just did a study on talent mobility, looking at what companies doing to get employees the experience they need to really develop them. We looked at about seven different kinds of mobility. And the most interesting one is a current trend that's starting to take off is looking at your supply chain. In other words, the different companies that you work with on a regular basis, they could be even customers, to give your employees an experience that's even outside of your organization and then bring them back in. So a lot of times the opportunity for the experience isn't available inside the company. So should they be looking outside the company also to give employees the experience they're going to need to get to that next level or that three levels up?
Well, Jay, thank you very much for being our guest today on GlobalRadioTalkShow.com. Jay Jamrock, Senior Leader of I4CP, that's Institute for Corporate Productivity. It's all about peers and research and tools and data. This is Ed Cohen, editor of GlobalBusinessNews.net and your host on GlobalRadioTalkShow.com, signing up from St. Petersburg, Florida and San Diego, California. Thank you, Jay. And
thank you
all for listening today.